Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, classification of the six spheres. So this discourse appear in middle and saying, 137 discourse. I heard thus, the Blessed One was living in the monastery offered by Anathapindika in Jetha's grove in Savatthi. The Blessed One addressed the bhikkhus from there. Bhikkhus, I will teach the classification of the six spheres. Listen attentively. I will teach. Those bhikkhus agreed, and the Blessed One said, bhikkhus, you should know the six internal spheres, the six external spheres, the six classes of consciousness, the six classes of contact, 18 ramblings of the mind, and the 36 in seven steps. Here, on account of this, dispel this. When the noble disciple develops the three establishment of mindfulness, he becomes a teacher suitable to instruct a gathering. He is said to be incomparable tame of those to be tamed. This is the short exposition of the classification of the six mental spheres. It was said that the six internal spheres should be known. Why was it said so? The spheres of the eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind should be known. If it was said the six internal spheres should be known, it was said on account of this. So this eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, and the mind, I mean, this is our biggest problem. And when we know, that means we should know that this is the impermanent nature, suffering nature, all those things should be known properly. It was said that six external spheres should be known. Why was it said so? The spheres of the form, sounds, smells, taste, touches, and idea should be known. If it was said the six external spheres should be known, it was said on account of this. Well, it is sort of Buddha is going in terms of, we can see that it looks like it is very simple. They are the biggest problems, the internal six and the external six. And Buddha said in another discourse, and this is all. Everything is included in these 12. And if someone says, I will actually declare something other than these 12, he cannot even answer when he was examined, ask questions. It is this big. The six classes of consciousness should be known. Thus was it said, and in reference to what was it said? Eye consciousness, ear consciousness, nose consciousness, tongue consciousness, body consciousness, intellect consciousness. The six classes of consciousness should be known. Thus was it said, and in reference to thus was it said. So we have this eye, and there is form, and the eye contact in the form, eye consciousness come to arise. And similarly ear and the sound. So ear consciousness, nose, smell, so the nose consciousness, and the tongue, taste, tongue consciousness, the body and the tangible object, body consciousness, and the mind and the mental state, so there is this mind consciousness. So those are the six classes of consciousness. The six classes of contact should be known. Thus was it said, and in reference to what was it he said? Eye contact, ear contact, nose contact, tongue contact, body contact, intellect contact. The six classes of contact should be known. And was it said in reference to this was it said. So that we have the eye and the form, so the eye consciousness come to arise. Meeting of the three is called contact. So the contact always need those three. So similarly ear, sound, ear consciousness, the meeting of the three is called the contact. It was said that the 18 rambling of the mind should be known. Why was it said so? Seeing a form with the eye, the mind dwells in pleasure, dwells in displeasure, dwells in equanimity. Hearing a sound, smelling a scent, tasting, experiencing a touch, cognizing an idea from the mind in pleasure, dwells in displeasure, dwells in equanimity. Thus there are six rambling in pleasure, six in displeasure, six in equanimity. If it was said the 18 rambling of the mind should be known, it was said on account of this. So that's the where the problem gets started. And we get the eye and the form, then the eye consciousness, and then this contact, and then because of the contact there is this feeling. pleasure, displeasure, neutral feeling come to arise, then with that one we go with that, you know, we always want the pleasurable one, we go with that one. The displeasure one, we don't like it, so we get the hatred feeling. And so mental ramblings starting with that. The 36 states to which beings are attached should be known. Thus was it said, and in reference to what was it said. Six kind of household joy, six kind of renunciation joy, six kind of household displeasure, and six kind of renunciation displeasure, six kinds of household equanimity, and six kind of renunciation equanimity. This is the very important part in this, well, every part is important. This one is very important for a meditator. When you are actually meditating about the Eightfold Path meditation, when you think about the right thought, so there is this thought of renunciation. Now actually Buddha is now explaining what is this thought of renunciation actually means. It's in greater detail. And see how far it is actually going. And what are the six kind of household joy? The joy that arises when one regards as an acquisition, the acquisition of forms cognizable by the eye, agreeable, pleasing, charming, endearing, connected with world debates, or when one records the previous acquisition of such forms after they have passed, ceased and changed. That is called household joy. So it's something like that. We there's a Pali word is patilabha, that we actually got something. Let's say someone go and buy some things from the stock market, you know, the stocks are lower, and so after getting that one, I got a really good gain. Or one may be buying some sort of a bargain in shopping or something like that one. So there is this householders, this pleasure, six kind of pleasure. Or else we go to the past and then we recall that I in that such and such a date that I got this particular one, and we, you know, talking about, you know, the mental rambling is coming up with that one, whatever thing we got before, and explaining to someone that I got such and such a date, where did you get this one. So we start talking about it. And what are the six kind of renunciation joy? The joy that arises when experiencing the impermanency of those very forms. They are change, fading and cessation. One sees with right discernment, as it actually is, that all forms, past or present, are impermanent, stressful, subject to change. This is called the renunciation joy. So this is opposite of the other one. Previously the householder is having this thought that I got some sort of furniture or something. Is very joyful about that one. And one day that one actually breaking and something like that one, then he contemplate about the impermanent nature. So imagine the two instances of the same person. One can actually either start thinking, well, the renunciation person is the monk and this I am over here talking about this material things, and monk has renounced. Or else you can actually think that this is the same person that who was actually acquiring those household things and becoming happy about those things. And next day morning he sit down like cross and he is doing the meditation, and then he thinks about the impermanent nature. So then you can see there are two different persons within that self, what we call self. So there is this renunciation joy because of that one. So that is the impermanent nature, contemplating our impermanent nature. And what are the six kind of household displeasure? The displeasure that arises when one regards as non-acquisition, the non-acquisition of forms cognizable by the eye, agreeable, pleasing, charming, endearing, connected with world debates, or when one recalls the previous non-acquisition of such forms after they have passed, ceased and changed. That is called household displeasure. So now this person is unhappy because I couldn't get that job, I couldn't get that thing, I couldn't acquire this thing, or that the shares was going down, I could have bought it, I couldn't buy it, that sort of thing. Or if thinking about the mental content, then one can actually think I could have actually missed that scene and Yeah, it goes in that way as well. And what are the six kind of renunciation displeasures? You see, the renunciation displeasure is there as well. The displeasure coming from the longing that arises in one who is filled with longing for the unexcelled liberations when experiencing the impermanency of those very forms. Their change, fading and cessation, he sees with right discernment as it actually is, that all forms, past or future, are impermanent, stressful, subject to change. And he is filled with this longing, when will I enter and remain in the dimension that the normal ones now enter and remain in? This is called the renunciation displeasure. Now think about a monk, for example, who is actually meditating, you know, that he is contemplating about impermanent nature. And he sees this suffering nature, but he has not attained. He hasn't got any attainment. Now he thinks about the arahants. You know, they are actually abiding in a really good way, that they have the pleasure and happiness because they are arahants. And when would I become an arahant? That sort of feeling. It is therefore even for a meditator who wants to attain, you know, the stream enterer or whatever status, that everyone other than arahants has got this thing, that I want to get out of this suffering, I don't want to go to hell, I don't want to go to animal realm, that sort of thing. So I want to become a stream enterer. So he's struggling and, you know, doing this one, and then there is displeasure because he has not attained it. So normally displeasure is unskilled state of the mind, akusal, but this one is skilled state of the mind. So if someone has got a aspiration for liberation, and therefore he is having this sort of thoughts, that they are not akusal or unskilled state, they are the skilled states of the mind. And what are the six kind of household equanimity? The equanimity that arises when a foolish, deluded person, a run-of-the-mill person, so that is normally ordinary person, untold person, who has not conquered his limitations or the results of action, and who is blind to danger, sees a form with the eye. So such equanimity not go beyond the form, which is why it is called the household equanimity. So householder also got this equanimity. So for example, if you are sitting down on a sort of a chair, let's say neither comfortable nor uncomfortable chair, there is equanimity about that. And if it is comfortable, there may be physical happiness. If it is uncomfortable, there is a physical unhappiness, pain. And if it is neither comfortable nor uncomfortable, I'm fine, I'm happy in certain way, that it remains in that way. So there is this equanimity. That equanimity is there for many things, that whether we know or not, it is there.
So is equanimity bad?
Equanimity is good.
Yes.
But this equanimity is actually not going beyond that chair. If you talk about the chair, that you have the equanimity for this chair, for example, and that's it. It's not spread to the other things. So with that kind of equanimity, there is ignorance lies latent in that one. For example, if someone is thinking this chair will remain as this as it is, then that is the ignorance, that this is impermanent, or someone can come and take this one. So
does that mean that we see something or we hear something, do we have to think of the impermanent nature of it?
All the time. Even the arahants do that. So it is up to that level. Arahants don't have to do it. They don't have to contemplate the impermanent nature sort of thing, because they have done what supposed to be doing. So, but it is for their peace and abiding when they consider things as this, whatever the five aggregates of clinging, matter, feeling, perception, volitional formation and consciousness. Regarding them, if one regards that this is impermanent, subject to suffering and so on, so that is for the pleasant abiding.
Is it only during meditation time?
All the time. Because that for arahants, that the impermanent nature is so developed, very well developed, so when they see something, they get that idea, I have liberated from this, and there is no value of this one, and this is impermanent and suffering nature. So that's why Buddha is telling us to have the impermanent nature, the wise attention, that is called wise attention, where we will maintain in the mind all the time. So if you have that one, it's like a weapon. Nothing is coming into the mind. So it's cut off at that particular point. So no mental ramblings will occur. So that is the stopping of that. So we need to have, we need to establish the mindfulness, so that mindfulness will remind that this object is impermanent, this person is impermanent, and so on.
So the arising phenomenon, the passing away phenomenon, when I sit on a chair or a cushion, it's good that I should be aware of the arising of this cushion and it's passing away, that's the same?
Yeah. Having done the meditation before, you have that thought that how this is the cushion and this is the material things made of these four great elements, and there is this arising phenomenon and passing away phenomenon. So this, if you know that one, then that, do you know the impermanent nature?
Not to attach to that cushion.
Not to attach to anything else in the world, not only the cushion. So this cushion and the similar cushions and other cushions, every cushion.
So the cushion is a phenomenon and it arises and passes away, is that right?
Well, it come to arise, how does this cushion come to the temple?
It's a phenomenon in that sense.
Yeah. Somebody actually, you know, donated it, and so it's arrived over here. So there was just a sort of a craving establishing upon that one, otherwise there won't be any.
So if we look at it in that sense, sort of ignoring it, is it? Like, you know...
No, householder's equanimity you are talking about?
No, this equanimity, now we are talking about equanimity, like you see something and you do not think about it, you just...
You always think.
No, yeah, it's... Like, no, nothing, no, it's not something pleasurable, it's not something...
Displeasure?
Yes.
But this is neither pleasurable,
yes,
nor non-pleasurable,
yes.
Yeah? So then one should know the when you have that thought, what Petakopadesa actually says, you need to think about the whole particular samuppada, whole dependent origination. In regard to the pleasurable feeling, one would see that this is the arising phenomena of suffering. In regard to the displeasure feeling, one should see this is suffering itself. And in regard to the neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable feeling, one should see the whole dependent origination. That is the part a worldling has not got thoroughly, not understood.
I think that's why some people that... for an example, some people say that when somebody is craving for something, that they say, it's okay, I don't mind whether I have it or not.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just that feeling, but there is no dhamma in that,
mm-hmm.
that they can think about,
mm-hmm.
that this is because of this nature, it doesn't matter for me.
Yeah.
Because it's a...
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care sort
mm-hmm.
of thing. Yeah. But that particular thing is actually... the leading to something called Vaisankata Lakshana, that is this all the constructions are failing. It's leading to that level.
Mm-hmm.
So the ignorance part is the most difficult part. One cannot actually understand. The pleasurable one, you know that I'm going with it, and so I have this thing, right? The displeasure one we know as well, then I have the anger. I will have an anger in this moment. And the neutral one does not know the arising phenomena, the passing away phenomena, and then the satisfaction, danger and escape regarding that feeling. All five is not known, so that ignorance is there. So pleasurable feeling has got the tendency to attachment. Displeasure feeling has got the tendency to aversion. And the neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable feeling has tendency to ignorance. So ignorance means avidya paccaya sankhara, you know, that is starting from the ignorance that there is this volitional formation, and then volitional formation, then the consciousness, and then the name and form, and then the six spheres, and feeling, craving, clinging, and the existence of craving, and then birth. So whole thing should be thought at that time. So that actually makes it hard to understand the Dhamma. that since it is that difficult, is difficult to understand this equanimity feelings, because no one is actually doing it to that level of meditation. That one got to do that one somehow one day to understand this the rising phenomena and the passing away phenomena. So
that's what in when you meditate the samadhi meditation also, that you say that not to one would like that pleasure and then try to stay there all the time and try to get that all the time. But that's also the equanimity stage, isn't it? Because
beyond the pleasure in that state, that you got the pleasure, I don't want the pleasure, and you have gone beyond that one, and that equanimity state is good. Because that if you actually have the impermanent nature, contemplating impermanent nature, and your mind become expanded, you can see that all the tensions in the mind is gone, and it's like this skull is open. So at that state, you don't care about anything. The gun can go over here, don't care. And that's a very vast mind. So yes, we get attached to that one as well. So getting into that state. Either way, all the feelings are bad. Whatever Buddha said, in conclusion, in one discourse, Buddha says, whatever thing felt is included in the suffering. Whether it's a pleasure, displeasure, or neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable feeling, all included in the suffering. So, there is this renunciation, equanimity, by contemplating about the impermanent nature. Their change, fading, and cessation. So he actually knows this one, yata bhutam samma panyaya. So he knows actually it is so. So and then so we can see that there is the similarly for the sound, smell, taste, tactile sensations and ideas, that there is this renunciation equanimity. This equanimity is really vast. You know that previously we were talking about a chair, for example, and that there is this household, mind, for example, has got this thought that this is, well, I don't care, sort of state. But he does not see the impermanent nature of this chair and all the other chairs and everything else in the world. Now, this equanimity has got real value because he knows impermanent nature, suffering nature, and not self nature for this object as well as all the other objects. So Buddha is asking us to develop that. Now we can see that there were 18 sets, 18 things for a household. The household mind got regarding something that he has actually acquired, there was pleasure. And regarding something he could not acquire, there was displeasure. Regarding something that he has got the neither pleasurable nor non-pleasurable feeling, so there is this three. So if you take into eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind, 3 × 6, 18 over there. And the renunciation also, there are 18. So that is by contemplating impermanent nature, there is this rapture, pleasure arises. When you contemplate about this suffering nature, the pleasure arises in the mind. And one would get the displeasure, well, I'm putting much effort and I could not attain. In one bhikkhu, for example, he was walking up and down and doing the meditation, and his foot was bleeding as well, and he was thinking, I am a one. If among those bhikkhus, I am a one has got that much effort to attain, and I can't attain. And this Dhamma is not for me. He went to that level as well. So he thought of getting out of that life. And Buddha actually saw this one from his divine eye, and he appeared. And Buddha asked him, when you were, he was a violin player. When you were playing the violin at that time, when these strings are very tight, would you get the music correct? No. When they are loose? No. So when they are right, rightly adjusted. So likewise, Buddha said to balance his, he got much effort, but no other thing. So he attained later on, by following. So one practicing for this one, he is getting this dispassion as well. When I am going to attain? So now Buddha is giving a good medicine over here. It's a really good medicine for one. Because we do this one, that's why I'm saying this. We do go into these bad directions and bad thinking. So what's the Buddha's medicine over here? So Buddha said the 36 states to which beings are attached should be known. This was it said, and in reference to this was it said. With regard to them, depending on this, abandon this. Thus what is said, and in reference to what was it said. Here, by depending and relying on the six kind of renunciation joy, abandon and transcend the six kind of household joy. Such is their abandoning, such is their transcending. So, you see the household mind, householder, for example, got this the joy, because he acquired something. So, he's got some sort of a happiness. And the same person meditating, for example, in the next moment, that he is contemplating about the impermanent nature. So then he is going to dhyana and the rapture, happiness. So Buddha said, because of that rapture, give up this household pleasure. Whatever the household thing, household pleasure, give up because of that one. Because Buddha is saying this one is much pleasurable than the householder's one. Householder's one is really useless in that sense. It's compared to a bone without, flesh. So, that's the first thing. By depending and relying on six kinds of renunciation and displeasure, abandon and transcend the six kinds of household displeasure. Such is their abandoning, such is their transcending. So, householder has got the displeasure. Because he lost a piece of wood or, broken piece of wood or lost in stock market or whatever thing it is. And he is thinking about, I lost this particular one. And, some people actually jump out of windows as well, when stock market crash sort of thing. And so probably he would see another person, a monk. He's actually now thinking about, I'm actually struggling to attain, but I have not attained. Isn't that a very honorable thing? If I lose a piece of junk and I am actually crying for it, and that the monk has given up all these things, he is actually thinking about an honorable goal and he has got this pleasure. So, because of that displeasure, Buddha said, give up this displeasure. So, it's a sort of valuable thing he is used to give up this one. By depending and relying on the six kind of renunciation equanimity, abandon and transcend the six kind of household equanimity. Such is their abandoning, such is their transcending. So, they similarly for the equanimity. The householder got equanimity, renunciation has got equanimity. So, now you can see Buddha replaced the householder side with the renunciation side. So, this renunciation, householder's displeasure, renunciation displeasure. Householder's pleasure, renunciation pleasure. And householder's equanimity, renunciation, equanimity. So this side is gone and then the only remaining in the renunciation thoughts. Because there is equanimity to, so then Buddha said, by depending and relying on the six kind of renunciation joy, abandon and transcend the six kind of renunciation displeasure. So, renunciation person also got the displeasure because he is thinking, when I am going to become an Arahant? Buddha said, don't think about it. There is this jhana, there is this concentration, which gives you happiness. Go to the happiness level. Leaving out thinking about the displeasure that is bad, become pleasure. Because Nibbana is to be attained only through pleasure, not through displeasure. By one, someone who is being affected by something and thinking about that bad thing that happened to him or she sort of thing is useless, thinking about that. So Buddha is asking them to be happy, pleasurable, so by the meditation. And then Buddha said, by depending and relying on the six kind of renunciation equanimity, abandon and transcend the six kind of renunciation joy. So Buddha now said, rather than be happy, and there is a much more better one, that is the equanimity one. So, go into the equanimity level. And then Buddha said, because the eyes are equivalent to diverse clinging. The eyes are equivalent to single clinging. What is the equivalent to diverse clinging? Because the eyes are equivalent to forms, to sounds, smells, tastes and touches. This is equivalent to diverse clinging. So that regarding eye, ear, nose, tongue and the body, the eyes is diverse equanimity. And there is this, actually it is not single clinging over here, it is single thing. It is that one going beyond these material things, one can maintain that space is infinite. If you leave out those last week discussion, for example, if you leave out these material things, that the element of extension, element of motion, element of heat and element of cohesion, the four great elements, if you go beyond that one, what is remain is the space. And then you see the space is infinite. So your mind fixed upon the consciousness that space is infinite, nothing else. And so there is one perception. What is that perception? Space is infinite. So think about the trouble one would have about the body, the material things. You know, this body, for example, really troublesome, material things. Once you set your mind free from these material things, going beyond that one, Pali says, Purupa Sanya Samati Kamadhi, you know, going beyond that material things. If you leave out these things are not mine, and then you can actually reach that space is infinite level consciousness. There it is so, happiness is so much. It is not a pleasure, it is equanimity, but very refined version of the equanimity. One would maintain that space is infinite, nothing else. Now when we think about these material things, always our mind get troubles. You know, I have to wash the car, I need the petrol, I need to do this one, you know, I need to clean the house, everything is coming up. But when you think about the space is infinite, you don't have anything. It's just maintaining space is infinite. So that's one perception. So Buddha said, so what is equivalent to single being? There is equanimity settled in the sphere of space, in the sphere of consciousness, in the sphere of nothingness, and in the sphere of neither perception nor non-perception. This is equanimity of single clinging. So how do we arrive at those things? Well, we get rid of these elements, four great elements from the mind, that these are not mine, and then space is infinite. Having reached the mind, maintain the mind, the equanimity level for the space is infinite for a long time, then he does not need that object called space is infinite to maintain that equanimity level. So without support of the space element, one can maintain consciousness is infinite. So he maintained the consciousness infinite for a long time, as much as he wished. And having maintained that one, he understands this pleasure, this equanimity with the consciousness. What I know is pleasure, displeasure, equanimity. All these three are constructed. Constructed because of the depending on the contact. Having understood that one, he now does not want even have to have pleasure. That the consciousness in finite level, he does not want that one. So he is going beyond that one. And so if there are only six elements, and if you disregard those six elements from the mind, that these are not mine, what are you left with? Nothing. So one would reach plane of nothing, no thing. So having reached the plane of nothing, but he still perceives that there is no thing. Now he does not want to have that perception either. So he go beyond that perception and reach plane of neither perception nor non-perception. So one maintain that sort of level.
These are the jhana levels?
Yeah, yes. They all are the four higher jhanas.
Is this with this jhana levels, does it happen? Did you have to think like that, or isn't it happening automatically from one to the other?
No. You got to have that understanding. There's a discourse Buddha explaining how to attain this one. I think Buddha is saying 111 or something. That so Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta is another one. One way to attain the plane of nothing, for example, is to think there is nothing self, or there's nothing pertaining to the self. Sunya vidha natta niva atta niyena. That's what is in Pali. There's nothing belong to self. For example, for self, there's this my leg, body, all those things is not self. So I can't regard any of these things as self, and there's nothing belong to that self. So the self does not have this leg. That perception one has to see. One would get that perception with understanding all impermanent nature of this leg and all those things.
But also the self does not have this idea, or the self does not have this language. So you do it to your mental fabrications as well, don't you? The
yes.
legs are easy, but the
not only material things. So you got to do that only the feeling, your perception, volitional formation, and consciousness. All five has to be handled, not only material things. So all five. So I was actually explaining it on in a short sense. So not only materiality, if you go beyond the materiality, then you are in the space is infinite level. And if you go beyond that one, so you the consciousness is infinite, but you still maintain the feeling. And you go beyond that one, then you only maintain the perception and the volitional formation. And you go beyond the perception, then you only have the volitional formation. For the neither perception nor non-perception level, you are not constructing anything. You just live with the remainder of volitional formation. Whatever thing the volition that you had at the time of attainment of the neither perception, non-perception, you are not perceiving. Or you are not perceiving either. So these states has to be experienced in a way. So there is this thinking. Or if you stay for a long time, then, for example, if I maintain space is infinite for a long, long, long time, and now I can actually maintain without space is infinite.
No, not that what I meant actually, because when you think material things are impermanent, then you realize that, and then the next stage, once one thing is removed, the rest is left. That's what I meant, isn't it?
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't have to think about the rest, that I have this rest.
Our mind is monkey mind. It doesn't go anywhere unless you let this one go. So, by contemplating about the impermanent nature over here, you have to give up this one. Now, where am I going to hook into? Space. Mm-hmm.
And then once you realize the impermanent nature of the space, you think that is impermanent.
Yeah.
And then you, not knowing that, you cling to the rest of the things.
Yes, because then the feeling is more prominent at that stage.
Mm.
So that's what he feels in the consciousness is infinite state. Yeah. So we don't live this one and do not go for anything. We always leave this one and catch something else. Yeah, so that's why monkey mind. So now we can see that Buddha said that because of that the single thing, give up this diverse equanimity. So you are actually, Buddha sent you to higher planes, the higher consciousness levels, right? And then Buddha said, this is bhikkhu, on account of equanimity to single clinging, overcome and dispel the equanimity to diverse clinging. Thus comes about the overcoming and dispelling equanimity to diverse clinging. Because without desiring equanimity to a single clinging, overcome and dispel equanimity to a single clinging. So you went to a higher plane, and then having reached that higher plane, do not stay there. And because the Pali word is actually over here really beautiful, it says atammayata. Atammayata in Pali means not made of thatness. You see, all those consciousness that we are talking about, space is infinite, consciousness is infinite, all those things are constructed. It's made of something, made of my own feelings, my own perception, you know, my method of meditation and all those things. It's made of something. And because there is something that made of nothing, it is not made of anything, that is Nibbana, give up that one and attain Nibbana. So see Buddha's renunciation, how far it's going. It's starting with the householder. Householders with the pleasure, displeasure and equanimity, and replace that one is the renunciation, pleasure, displeasure and equanimity. And then Buddha order them accordingly. So give up the displeasure, don't be unhappy, be happy. When you become happy, Buddha said go into the next state and be have the equanimity state. Well, that equanimity state, there is a better one than that one, that is the single equanimity. So go into those states. Having gone there, Buddha says now, give up that one because there is Nibbana. All the other things are constructed. All the other things constructed. It's like that one who is not in the school, go to school. You go to school and then say, go to grade 1 and grade to grade 1. This is not enough. Go to grade 2 and then attaining the Nibbana. So this is actually, if you can remember this one, this part of the discourse, when you are going through the Eightfold Path, and right view, the right thought, thought of renunciation, it is this thought of renunciation Buddha is talking about. It is not stopping anywhere else, it is stopping at Nibbana, nothing in between. You know, all the states are there, one would develop, go from one to another, and that's where it ends up. So, if you can recall about this, the great four in his course, Buddha said this, anaso cittas arittissas ariyamaggan samangito takko vitakko. A person who is actually practicing the Eightfold Path, who has become an Aryan, who has got this stage, whatever the reasoning or the mental fixity, mental absorption, and that is called the right thought. What is that right thought? That is that fixing the mind to the Nibbana, nowhere else. So beginner, or you go to the Jhana state, giving up the household one, and becoming, maintaining those states, and going to the equanimity level, and going to the higher level, and then you fix your mind to the Nibbana. So it is really valuable. You need to read the Great 40 discourse with this one, the Mahachattarika Sutta, the Great 40. It's in the middle, let's say. So, actually, if you do the Eightfold Path meditation, this one comes to your mind automatically as well. But if you know this one, you can quickly arrive at that right thought. And thus comes about the overcoming and dispelling of equanimity to a single clinging. If it was said on account of this, dispel this, it was said on this, on account of this. So, you can see this equanimity Buddha is talking about, anyone can do. A householder can do, because he can actually have the household life. He can sit down and do the meditation and attain all these states. See the value of that one? So,
once a person attains a particular jhana level, and when he starts meditation, can he always go back to the same level whenever he starts meditation again?
No. It is the whatever the method that you are actually using to attain that particular state, if you are following the same method, then you can.
Mm-hmm.
It is depending on the path. It's like if you want to go to Sydney, you follow a certain path.
Mm-hmm.
If you follow that path, you are going there. But if you go here and there, because of the hindrances, then you are not reaching like that.
Yeah. And again, you cannot jump because you have to go
through, the path. Yes. So that state, whatever state you acquire, You understand that it is good, but in the meditation time, don't think, yesterday I went into this particular state, that was really good, I want to go to that one, you know, sort of thing. So if you set up the aspiration, then you are thinking about Sydney, not about the path. So you are not reaching that one. So it's very important that you, whatever the path that you are supposed to be following, that is the Eightfold Path, nothing else. So, these three, establishment of mindfulness, the noble disciple practices and becomes a suitable teacher to instruct a crowd. Why was it said so? Because the teacher teaches the disciple out of compassion, saying, this is for your good and welfare. The disciple do not lend an ear, do not attend to know it. They leave the dispensation. Bhikkhu thus gone one does not feel displeased, abides mindful and aware without leaking thoughts. This is the first establishment of mindfulness practicing, which he becomes suitable teacher to instruct a crowd. Well, in translation is not that good. Here actually it is something that neither delighted nor does he experience delight. Buddha does not experience with that, because the Buddha instruct these people how they leave the dispensation, they go away. By that time, Buddha is neither delighted nor does he experience delight, but dwells untroubled. He is not troubled by the, normally one would have, another teacher would have anger. I told these people are not listening and they left and sort of thing. So Buddha is untroubled by that one. And then that is the first one. The second one is, and again, Bhikkhu, the teacher, teaches the disciples out of compassion, saying, this is for your good and welfare. Of them, a certain disciple does not lend ear, does not attend to know it. He leaves the dispensation. A certain disciple lends ear, attend to know it. He does not leave the dispensation. Bhikkhu thus going on, neither feels pleased nor displeased. Giving up both, abides with equanimity, mindful and aware. So he got the equanimity level. So because one person is actually left, another person stays. So proper translation is, neither delighted nor does he experience delight, and neither is he depressed nor does he experience depression. So maintain the equanimity level. Again, Bhikkhu, the teacher, teaches the disciples out of compassion, saying, this is for your good and welfare. The disciple lend ear, attend to know it. They do not leave the dispensation. Bhikkhu, the thus gone one, feels pleased, abide mindful and aware without leaking thoughts. Again, the proper translation is, delighted experience delight, but he dwell untroubled. So in this particular case, that when one instruct, Buddha instruct, that he is actually, stay in the dispensation and make progress. In that particular case, Buddha become delight and he experienced delight, but he dwell untroubled. He's not clinging to that one, not overflowing with raga, because that stays, that person stays. If it was said, the noble disciple practices these three establishments of mindfulness and become a suitable teacher to instruct the crowd, it was said on account of these. Bhikkhu, it is said, he is the incomparable tamer of those to be tamed. This is the sentence, but no one I have ever heard explaining this one properly. Anuttaro Purusa Dhamma Sarathi in Itipiso Bhagava, that thing. The Buddha has given the definition what it means by Anuttaro Purusa Dhamma Sarathi, that is incomparable tamer of those to be tamed. Why was it said so? The elephant tamer makes the elephant to be tamed go in one direction, either east, west, north or south. The horse tamer makes the horse to be tamed to go in one direction, either east, west, north or south. The oxen tamer makes the ox to be tamed go in one direction, either east, west, north or south. Bhikkhu, the thus gone one, perfect and rightfully enlightened, makes the man to be tamed go in eight directions. That's why Buddha is called the incomparable tamer of those to be tamed. It's not that because of the Angulimala, Angulimala Dhamana, that sort of thing. It's not that one. Because this one, this is a really big thing. So what are those directions? In matter to see matter, this is the first direction. So what it means is that there is this internal perception of blue. For example, let's say someone developed this kasina. And then he got the acquire this symbol of blue. And he can now internally have this perception about the blue color. Now he spread the whole world with blue. For him, the whole world is blue. And then it's not only that he got the blue, because he can make it vast, really big. And then what's the value when you have something? We don't have water, then we really value it, right? And plenty pouring from the sky, nobody care about that, right? Now you have got something blue. Think about the blue eyes in this case. Someone got blue eyes, a nice blue eyes. Someone has seen that one. Now you got that perception, and then you spread the whole world as blue. You got much as you want. And then you have to liberate from that blue, right? So that's the idea over here. And then with the internal immaterial perception to see external matter. This is the second direction. So in this particular case, there is nothing internally have maintained, but externally completely the blue sort of thing is maintained. And to be released in the pleasant end, this is the third direction. That is, for example, if you maintain the loving kindness meditation, the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, all the times, you know, immeasurable level. So you are so happy because you are in the third jhana level with that that happiness and spread means it spread. So that is to be released in the pleasant end. So this is another release over there. Overcoming all perceptions of matter and aversion and not attain to diverse perceptions, which space is boundless, to attain to the sphere of space. This is the fourth direction. So we talked about the space is infinite consciousness little while ago. So Buddha is sending us, even in this discourse also, Buddha is sending the householder, you know, go into that space is infinite consciousness. And then Buddha is sending us to consciousness is infinite level and the plane of nothing. Neither perception nor non-perception, that is the seventh one. Overcoming neither perception nor non-perception to attain the cessation of perception and feeling. That is that Nirodha Samapatti, attaining to that level. This is the eighth direction. Bhikkhu, the thus gone one, perfect and rightfully enlightened, makes the man to be tame, go in these eight directions. Bhikkhu, if it was said, he is incomparable tamer of those to be tame. It was said on account of this. The Blessed One said thus, and those bhikkhus delighted in the words of the Blessed One. So you can see that where it ends, it's in the Nibbana. So Buddha is sending us to this thing. I can tell you another very short discourse over here, that we were talking about the blue color, right? And Buddha, in this discourse, appear in Anguttara Nikaya, Attakkanipata, Chapalavagga. This is the stations of mastery over the senses, eye, ear, nose, tongue, body and the mind, right? Because these eight are the stations of mastery over the senses, what eight? With internal material perception, a certain one sees few beautiful, ugly external forms. Mastering them, he becomes perceptive as I know and see. This is the first mastery over the senses. So, same as the first one over here. He knows about that, you know, that everything is actually made, that truth, spread it to the highest level. And he knows. What he knows? He knows the impermanent nature of these things. And this thing. That discourse go in that way. I will actually get into this color thing. With the internal immaterial perception, certain ones see blue external form with blue marks and shine. Mastering them, he becomes perceptive as I know and see. This is the fifth mastery of the senses, blue things. With the internal immaterial perception, a certain one sees yellow external forms with yellow marks and shine. Mastering them, he becomes perceptive as I know and see. This is the sixth mastery of the senses. Do you see the value of that one? Yellow. You see yellow. What do you see with yellow normally? People's skin, the body, you know, the yellow color sort of thing. Having seen that one, then you actually have the perception, you can make it vast. Now, when you see a person, you catch the color. That's the first attack one has got. And then to that color, one would actually attach, and there are other perceptions, secondary perceptions as well. It is the color that we did not know this one until Buddha said it in another discourse. It is the color we actually grab first. So we got this color, and let's say you are thinking about the color of that person, and then you actually have this, let's say yellow, right? You got the yellow much as you want over here, and you have got the perception developed. Think about the flowers, yellow, 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 everywhere yellow. So do you see any value of this yellow? Because it's the same yellow, right? So your mind is now become vast with yellow. Having made it really vast with yellow, and then you, I know and see. What do you know? The impermanent nature of this yellow. like the flower is impermanent, all the other things impermanent, you know, that sort of thing I know and see. And similarly, that blue, you know, the blue eyes, for example, is one example. And the red, and you can see that our lips and tongue sort of thing, red. So with that red, our mind is going with the red. So if you actually master the red, then I can get out of it. So these are really good techniques. This is appearing in few different places. I suppose that monks have used this one in early days very heavily. And so similarly white, you know, the with internal material perception, one sees white external forms with white marks and shine. What do you see with white in our body? Bones, teeth. Someone smiling, you can see the teeth. So then rather than one, it actually get attached to that one. So you can have the mastery for the white teeth. So you get the white and the white part, everything. The Buddha has given examples. For example, certain examples you can't find what they are. For the yellow one, Buddha saying, this is appearing in Mahasakuladaya Sutta, in middle and saying, Kannikar blossom. Kannikar blossom is yellow. Buddha said that Kannikar blossom, like the Kannikar blossom. So, we do not know what Kannikar blossom is. Like that, Buddha has given some examples from the flowers. So, if you see that colors, if you have the mastery over colors, so it's easy for someone to actually get rid of this sensuous desire about these things. So imagine the techniques Buddha has used those days. So yeah, this is a really good discourse. This actually explains what Buddha taught about this incomparable theme of the world, as well as how a householder can go to the thought of renunciation, or any person for that matter. And this concept is not very well understood. One would actually see that the thought of renunciation is, oh, I give up everything and I will become monk. That's what normal perception is. That doesn't actually solve the problem. It is this ability to get out of these states, you know, the displeasure, pleasure and these things, and go into the higher concentration and attaining the final Nibbana.
I feel there's no way one can attain without meditation.
Of course.
It's honest. Just read it and that's no. For that time that's it.
That's so. It. It's like a driving example, you know, someone is actually someone is in a car and then you can see the driver is driving in the clutch and gear and all those things, and I also know that one, you know, that how to drive this one in that way. But if you put him in that seat, he can't drive. The theory is there, but he can't drive. You got the practice, so the meditation should be there to get into that one. So to have the meditation, we need the seclusion. That means we need to set aside some time to practice the meditation. And then only we can go in. And there is a discourse, Buddha actually explaining what we were just talking about. Without having the seclusion, one can't. And to have the seclusion, one need to get out of the crowd as well. So it's only by that time one go into that state.
And also, when you meditate, sometimes you go beyond the things you discuss. For example, by your own way, you can find certain things which are not discussed.
Discussed. Yeah, and you will become really happy. A few days later, you actually find that discourse. It has happened to me many times. I did not know, I discovered it. And then I see the Buddha has actually said it. And so that's the really, really good, because the master's stamp is there. Yes, you are right, sort of thing. Yeah, it's this the jhana level. Where are you actually going through somehow? That's why Buddha is asking us to go there, go into those states. So when you go into those states, it just don't set up the mind, I want to attain jhana, that sort of thing. You just follow the path, eightfold path. Keep on following the eightfold path. Well, that path leads to jhana and everything. So you automatically go there.
By wanting something, you are actually constrain yourself in the first person.
Right? That's right. Yeah. That's why you are not attaining that thing. So just following the path, that's all. We need to have the faith in Buddha, and that path lead to Nibbana, like that we know how to go to Sydney. So one has to follow it. And these discourses help quite a lot understanding, for example, what is right thought. If this is only part of right thought, and to understand that one is really helpful.
But without a faith, people wouldn't meditate anyway.
No. Without the faith, one wouldn't even listen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they don't get the path.
Mm.
So you need to have the faith. The, everything is starting with the faith. Actually, it's starting with the suffering. Since it is suffering, you look for someone.
But so, to know it is suffering also, you have to know a bit of
dhamma. No. Let's say that my leg got amputated. And at that time, I know the how I'm suffering, right? That's kind of suffering. Not the four noble truth, complete noble truth. So that was a big misfortune. And at that time, well, I'm suffering. And then we look for someone, a teacher or someone who can actually tell a word or two to, you know, get rid of that one. So if you get the Buddha, and then Buddha will tell the correct thing, and then there is this faith arises because of that. And because of the faith, then there is this mindfulness. Satisampajana, mindfulness and clear comprehension. And then this wise attention and all those things coming into play. Stop for today then.